What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Arnies. We are two Hannah Montana fans just so happy to see Moises Arias getting more work. I'm Matt Johns, and I desperately want one of those cute vault jumpsuits.
And I'm Austin Terry, and something tells me oysters really don't taste that great 200 years into a wasteland.
On today's show, we're finally diving into Fallout now that it has wrapped up its first season run, another entry in the seemingly constant video game adaptations that we've been getting these days. All of a sudden, Austin, a few years ago, we went from all of them being, like, horrific and traumatic to being very good or great. So is this one going to fit that trend? I'm very curious. If you don't know, if you're not familiar with Fallout, the series depicts the aftermath of the Great War of 2077, an apocalyptic nuclear exchange in an alternate history of Earth where advances in nuclear technology after World War II led to the emergence of a retro-futuristic society and a subsequent resource war. Many survivors took refuge in Fallout bunkers known as vaults, unaware each vault was designed to perform sociological and psychological experiments on the dwellers themselves. More than 200 years later, in 2296, a young woman named Lucy leaves behind her home in Vault 33 to venture out into the dangerously unforgiving wasteland of a devastated Los Angeles to look for her father, who had been kidnapped. Along the way, she meets a Brotherhood of Steel squire and a ghoul bounty hunter, each, of course, with their own mysterious pasts and agendas to settle. That's probably the longest logline I've read, so forgive me, audience, if I'm a little out of breath.
It's a great summary, though.
It's a great summary. I think it's important to know because, I mean, we're going to get into it later, but, I mean, this show is really popping off. This is big. So, obviously, there's going to be a lot of fans of the source material coming in here, looking for things to pick apart, probably, and all that shit. But a lot of newcomers. You know, it's good to kind of know that if you haven't watched it yet, and maybe you're curious. But kind of going off that point, Austin, I'm curious. I think I know the answer to this, but as we're kind of getting into it here, what's your history, if any, with this franchise? Because I don't have a whole lot. And then, of course, I'm curious to hear your non-spoiler thoughts on the first season of the TV adaptation of Fallout.
Yeah, I am someone who has always heard great things about this video game franchise and just has never been able to click with it. I've tried to start Fallout 3 probably 7 or 8 times and just can never get into it. And I've never really given the other ones a shot. I did get pretty into the iPhone game that came out a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
But that's really it. So I came in relatively blind to this series, which was kind of fun since it is a video game adaptation. And transparently, this was a series when the initial teasers dropped and everything. Like, I fully intended to skip this one. This was giving me, like,
me too.
Borderlands movie vibes. Like, it looked like it was going to be terrible. And then I was out of town when it premiered. And to come back with, like, all the buzz and hype around this show, it was, like, almost impossible to pass up. And going straight into it, like, you're right. This is another good recent trend in video game adaptations where this show is super fun. It's not trying to like really change anything about the source material. It's just telling its own story within this world, which I always think is like the best approach for these video game things.
100%.
The mystery is super intriguing. The characters are great. Our two leads and Walton Goggins and Ella Purnell like really carry this show. And they just do a great job of like balancing a very violent world with like really smart humor. I think the writing is super smart and like taking video game things and making it accessible to an everyday viewer. Like especially for someone myself who doesn't know a lot about this world, they made it very accessible to come in and understand. And I think that's why this show has been taking off with just the general public. It's just a really fun, good like escape TV. And I had a blast. I can't say enough good things about the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I have slightly more history with the franchise. It sounds like we had the same experience playing Fallout 3, and I played it years later, so it was going into it knowing that, hey, this is one of the greatest video games of all time. I'm not dogging on it because I haven't played a whole lot of it, but it couldn't suck me in for some reason, and I didn't, like, enjoy playing it, and then I think you know this also. I'm one of those weird people that Fallout 4 comes out, I'm like, okay, I'll give it a try. You know, the trailer's got me hyped, even though I know nothing about it. And I loved it. And it turns out I'm the only one. Everybody else hates it. But that's the only difference between you and I. I played Fallout 4 pretty religiously. But same thing with 3. Although this one is getting me. I have downloaded New Vegas. I'm thinking about diving into that. So we'll see how that goes. But I'm so with you. I think the reason this one has been so successful is you don't need to know anything at all to watch this and enjoy it. You don't need any history. You don't need any background. And I'm so with you. And I think you and I, we also might be in the minority on that. But I feel like the best video game adaptations are the ones that take place in the same world. They're not trying to tell the same story of a game that came out decades before and just like, you know, doing the same exact thing. But now you are watching it instead of playing it. Like, that's how fun is that? So I like that this is in the canon, takes place in the world, but you don't need to know about that world. This is a good entry point. And man, this show, I thought the trailers sucked. So I'm with you on that. And I adored the show. I thought it was great. This was probably one of the most fun binges I've had in recent memory, in the sense that once I started it, it felt like I couldn't stop. Like, you know, I could have binged it because all the episodes were out at once, but it wasn't even because of that. It was just because I had to keep watching. I was just so invested, so curious, and the world is so interesting. I loved it. I think I may have told you this already, but I think it might be my favorite video game adaptation. And we've gotten great ones, like we said. But, you know, you think about something else that's great, like The Last of Us. That's kind of what I'm talking about. It's like they did a great job of adapting something, like the same story of something that already existed, right, last year. And that's cool. And that takes a lot of effort from a lot of people. I'm not, you know, shitting on that. But to me, this was like so cool and impressive. The fact that they're like, hey, we have this big sandbox. People love it. People are going to be critical. What if we created our own story? And they actually did that. Like, that's a hard thing to do and a scary thing to please fans and new people alike.
I was going to say, as much as I love The Last of Us show, I almost think this is more impressive from just the feat they were taking on. Because with Fallout being an RPG story, like, any player can have their own experience different from another player for the most part. So to like keep that experience engaging enough for existing fans and also bring in new fans is tough. So the route to tell your own story in this existing source material is almost harder, I think, than something like The Last of Us, where that foundation of the games is already so cinematic itself, with just the way they chose to unveil the game story of The Last of Us, that they had a great foundation to take from and great characters. But then to tell some of these new characters and also bring in the existing lore and still, like, I think the keyword is accessible for the show, because everyone can watch it without being a fan or not. And they did such a great job taking this on.
Yeah, I think it's a lot harder to nail themes and world than it is to nail something like characters and story. I mean, anybody can do that. Again, that doesn't mean it's going to be good, but it's harder to kind of nail the vibe, and they did that here. I think this show easily gets a glowing recommendation for the both of us. It's going to be a fun episode, I think, where we're just going to gush about something that we liked watching. But if you haven't watched it, if you're one of the few people that hasn't, make sure you go watch Fallout over on Amazon Prime. Nice little binge, like I said, just 8 episodes. They're all out. You can watch them all right now. Go watch them and then come on back to listen to the rest of this episode, because this is one where I do not want to spoil anybody. I don't want anybody listening to this that's kind of curious or like, oh, maybe I'll watch that. Definitely watch it and then come on back to finish this up.
Totally agree. Let's hop into our little blue vault jumpsuits and get into this world.
All right, everybody, this is your last warning. Welcome to spoiler territory for all of Fallout Season 1. As always, Austin, let's start off with some cast, crew, and critical reception talk.
So the Fallout show is created by Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy. This is a husband and wife duo who are, of course, well-known for so many great projects, but the most well-known of themselves working together is Westworld. The show is run by Graham Wagner and Geneva Robison-Dort. Our score for the show is composed by Raman Djawadi, who you, of course, may know from Westworld and Game of Thrones. And, of course, based on the video game series Fallout, created by Interplay Entertainment and later Bethesda Softworks under the direction of Todd Howard.
That's right. And for your cast, you have Ella Purnell as Lucy McLean, Aaron Moten as Maximus, Walton Goggins as the Ghoul, formerly known as Cooper Howard, Moises Arias, the Great, if you ask me, as Norm McLean, Leslie Uggams as Betty Pearson, Dave Register as Chet, Sarita Chowdhury as Lee Moldaver, and you got a little fun appearance from Michael Emerson as Dr. Wilzig, and the great Kyle MacLachlan as Hank McLean. Who should we shout out here, Austin? I mean, this is a list of all great people, in my opinion, so who should we single out?
Yeah, I don't think anyone is bad. I'll give a quick shout out to Ella Purnell. I'm a huge fan of hers from Yellow Jackets and thought she did a fantastic job as the lead in this show. Staying like very rose-colored glasses as her character, but then also like adapting to the world and just holding true to her principles, but doing what it takes to survive. Thought she was fantastic. But I gotta call out Walton Goggins. This guy is like a character actor great. And to see him almost get like a lead role was so much fun. I love him in Righteous Gemstones, and seeing him take on this ghoul role, like so different than Baby Billy. I loved him. Every time he was on screen, I was like, kind of hate this character. I hope he carries on. And by the end, like, I kind of came around to him, despite all the terrible things you saw him do throughout the show. I still am invested to see where his story goes in season two. So I thought he was perfect.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Me too. And something I think we're going to, you know, have to talk about once we get into our, you know, big conversation here is I can't think of a show in recent memory that has utilized, I think, flashbacks in a more effective manner that didn't feel cheesy, just to kind of flashback to just give you like a bunch of like a big info dump. Like this was whenever you're getting more about the ghoul's backstory, it was I was thrilling. I was so excited. But yeah, Walton Goggins, great and everything. I joked about it up top, but I'm not joking now. The character that I was most invested in, interested in, and it's a hard performance to nail, I would imagine, because you have to be very steady, very kind of calm. There is levity, but, you know, it's just a hard line to toe. But Moises Arias, I think, killed it as Norm. My favorite character of the show. Absolutely adored him in that storyline and another great arc. They just all the characters I thought got such interesting arcs in this show. That's hard to do. But big shout out to him. And then shout out to Raman Djawadi as well. I mean, his scores are always next level and unbelievable. But he did such a good job of like melding his original score with the classic kind of classical music that you would expect from the Fallout games. You know, they played a lot of those kind of old school things, and the show brought that in, and he did a good job of kind of melding those together.
The Brotherhood theme, like paired with how goofy that faction is, was perfect too. Because it's this epic, like grand medieval score, and then you got these like dorks running around in their armor.
It's so good. I love it. But yeah, okay, so there you go. You know what the two of us thought of Fallout, but what is everybody else saying? And of course, probably to no one's surprise, Fallout has received critical acclaim and currently has a 93% over on Rotten Tomatoes. The site's critical consensus is an adaptation that feels like a true extension of the games. Fallout is a post-apocalyptic blast for newcomers and longtime fans alike. Also really exciting to say, like, and this is like, this is crazy, but according to Variety, Fallout pulled in 65 million viewers in its first 16 days availability. It's the second most watched title in the history of the platform. And so it's unsurprising that basically right after the show premiered, they were like, yes, season two is happening. Yeah, stop asking us. We're working on it. So yeah, we are getting more.
Crazy where this show ranks because it's more than Invincible, The Boys, and Reacher, only outpaced by that Lord of the Rings show that I didn't watch.
And you know I did. You know, to no avail for my entire life and for our almost 2-decade-long friendship, I have tried to get you and Keith to love Lord of the Rings, and I can't do it. So I knew you wouldn't watch it. I did, and of course, I, like everybody else, was like, yeah, it's okay.
And there's on my list to go back to, but there's so much other stuff that keeps coming out.
Yeah, a lot of people gave it a try, I guess, if it's beating Fallout. All right, Austin, let's stop wasting time here, no pun intended. Let's go a little bit deeper. Let's get into our freeform discussion, kind of the main part of our show, where we just take a big list, add a bunch of stuff to it, the things we want to spend more time with it, and break it all down. So where do you think we should start today? Because we could start with the story, the release strategy. What do you think would be best?
Yeah, you mentioned that this was a really fun binge, and I agree, but I've been surprised to see like the Discord on social media being like people advocating that this should have been a weekly release show. And I keep seeing this paired against X-Men where they're like, X-Men should have been dumped all at once and this should have been released weekly. And I'm just shocked that people are wanting to go back to the old model. Like Apple TV has kind of nailed it with their weekly releases and keeping people engaged. But for the most part, I thought like collectively we'd all agreed we preferred things coming out at once. So I'm just surprised to see that like talking point come back.
It's weird, right? I mean, that used to be the whole thing. It's like, why not just put it all out, you know, and then we'll talk about it. But the discourse now is like, when you put everything out, we watch it because you're giving it all to us. But then the conversation dies down. The hype kind of goes away.
Yeah.
Like, so why would you spend so much money on something like this and then just throw it out? And it's going to be massive for a month and then people will forget about it until season two comes out. And it's weird because you're so right. Like we kind of have gone back and forth. I don't know how you feel. It's like going back to the old model does seem weird, but at the same time, it's like I love the show so much that it also kind of disappoints me because I know with the quality of this, this would have been like a Shogun. This would have been like an X-Men. We would have been talking about this every week, getting so excited for those midnight drops. So I can understand people being like, I'm glad we're getting a season two, but when you do this, it's like, you know, how many viewers do you lose next season because people have like moved on and don't care about the show anymore? So I kind of understand it. Maybe I'm moving closer to that side now. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm definitely still in the middle, because I think the only platform that does it consistently well is Apple, whereas all this other stuff, yes. I kind of just want it all at once. But Apple shows are so, like, they leave you hooked every single week, and you kind of like that anticipation. Whereas I am glad I was able to binge this show. Like, I think I actually would have lost interest if it had been released weekly. I found the mystery engaging, but not enough to, like, be like a Severance, where I was like, I cannot wait for Thursday. So I'm glad it came out all at once.
And maybe Amazon felt the same way. So maybe it was a deliberate choice. So maybe this, like, did better kind of story and pacing wise, kind of just all being out there. But it's actually, there's been a lot coming out recently that I think makes this conversation so interesting, because you say you're in the middle. It's also, I think the most annoying part is a lot of the streamers are in the middle. Like, how fucking, and we talk about this all the time. The Apple TV does it best, I agree. The people that does it worse, without question, is Netflix, because they're like, hey, we used to drop it all at once. Now we're going to give you half of an unfinished season. And then 12 months later, we're going to give you the rest of it. And so it's like, dude, and I know you don't care about Karate Kid and Cobra Kai. We've talked about that before. The trailer for the final season, and I'm not joking, this is going to sound like an Onion headline. The first trailer for the final season came out, like, I think last week, and they said, get ready for the three-part event. I'm like, oh, what does that mean? And they said, the first episode this July. I was like, holy shit, it's coming so soon. I can't wait. And then they were like, the next batch, November. I was like, November? And they were like, and the finale, 2025. And then I'm like, what the fuck? So it's like, even streamers can't agree on this. It's like, should we do it all at once or weekly, or just give you a few every, I don't know, like a year? It's a weird time for streamers, without question.
And Amazon also did it with Invincible, where they broke it up like into three episode things. And I haven't even seen part two yet because I forgot it existed. Because like that three episodes was not enough to keep me like hyped up for a 6 month gap between the next three episodes.
And then whenever the second batch came out, I watched it like over a month later. And I think I remember telling you, I was like, dude, that second half was really good, but it's like I didn't even care to watch it when they came out. I didn't know it was coming out because we had to wait months for it. So it's like, it's just a weird thing. I don't know.
I am curious, talking about Apple TV briefly, did this show give you some Silo vibes?
It's a good question. I was definitely thinking about that a lot while watching. And it's one of those funny things of like, you know, what comes first? What do you take inspiration of? Because, I mean, it's probably fair to say that I guess I don't know when the books that Silo was based on came out, so I don't know if that predates something like Fallout. If it doesn't, then I'm sure, you know, they took inspiration for it. But putting that aside, watching Silo definitely felt giving me, like, maybe a bit, like, more of, like, a serious take on something like Fallout. So watching kind of this as a potential, you know, originator of that was funny. Like, it's, like, giving you a lot of the same vibes, particularly in the vault sequences. So yeah, it was something that was on my mind. But I think, again, it's a testament to both of those crews, because I can't wait for more Silo and I can't wait for more Fallout, and for different reasons. So, you know, I don't think they like went overboard, if that makes sense.
No, I agree. I think they still feel very distinct. There was this little this is definitely a more fun version of Silo, I would say.
Yeah.
So I know we talked about you've played all of four. I've barely played anything. So as someone who has played through a Fallout game, how did you feel about how truthful they were as an adaptation?
I think it's one of the best and most truthful adaptations, because, again, they're not trying to retell elements of the exact same story you've seen. It's just, there are bits and pieces, sure, but what they nailed were the themes of Fallout, kind of this aggressive and scary world, and then you have these vault dwellers who, ironically, the ones that have been quote-unquote trapped are the ones that are the most idealistic, and they view themselves as the saviors whenever this whole thing ends. And then, of course, to their surprise, it never really started. You know, we've been living lives up here for centuries, so you guys are the ones behind. So they just nailed the world and the themes. And I think in an adaptation, that's what's most important. I think especially as the years go on, it becomes way less interesting to see a story adapted that you already know the story to, especially with like how many movies, how many TVs, partly because of streamers, come out these days. It's way more. It's like, I don't get as much of a thrill anymore. I used to, but not anymore, just watching something that I love be adapted. And again, I know those things are hard to do, but it's just, yes, I'm going to go sit down and watch something that I already know is going to happen. And it's always hard with video games, like we said, because I'm so used to being an active participant in that story. And now I'm going to go watch something where I'm passive and just like, oh yeah, they did that same thing. They did that right. That's why video game adaptations are hard. So yeah, the reason why I think this one is so good is it just felt truthful to the soul of Fallout, and that's harder to do. So yeah.
Yeah, I felt that too, even with how little I've played. I was curious because, like I said, I have only played like an eighth of Fallout 3 like a couple of times, but I don't remember the vaults being that big of a focus in the games. So I was surprised that this show spent so much time focused on the vaults, because when I think of a vault, I just think of it as like a starting point to get you out into the world.
Right.
So as you get deeper into the games, does the mystery of the vaults come up?
It's a good question again, and my experience is 3 and 4 as well, but yes, they always kind of felt like a fun little tutorial, and it's perfect for a player character because you have this one kind of playground, you're this like happy-go-lucky person, and then you're forced out into the shit, basically. So it's perfect for a game, but I do distinctly remember in 4, there's a lot of lore that you can kind of discover. Same thing with like Elder Scrolls, if you like stumble upon like things that you can read, which talk about the vault. So particularly in this show towards the end, when they're talking about how we're going to set up all the vaults to be an experiment, like in the games, like you're living in different vaults, not 31 through 33. And they were each designed for a very specific purpose. So like one of my favorite reads is someone that, again, doesn't have a lot of experience with the games, but love the show, is like there's a whole wiki that just lists all the vaults, and now they include 31 through 33, and it tells you what the Vault Tech experiment was, what the idea for that vault was, and it's just, it's wild to read. But yeah, so they don't have like as much of a presence in the games in terms of like screen time, if you want to call it that, but they are important, and the whole experimentation from Vault Tech was always kind of set up previously.
Yeah, and for me as a viewer with no knowledge of this world, that reveal and mystery in the show was the most engaging part. It's the center of the show, so it should be. But especially the reveal that like Vault Tech dropped the nuke so that way they could do these experiments was crazy.
Yeah, it's wild. It's like you kind of understand part of what they're saying. Like they're scared about, you know, this world conflict. But then their solution is like, hey, let's drop a bomb. We'll have these vaults set up for us and our rich friends. And your families, I guess, some of them at least, not Walton Goggins. and then we'll just wait it out. And then it turns out, you know, the world continued. It's just wild that, you know, they were advocates for this. And yeah, it's scary.
Let's talk about Walton Goggins, the backstory, and mainly his wife being so like revealed to be high up in Vault Tech. I kind of got the sense that the Bud guy who created Bud's Buds, like he kind of was a buffoon who stumbled his way into this, and she really was the one pulling the strings. Because every time you see him, they kind of bring up his failures. And then when the scene that really stands out to me is when Bud and Barb are walking into the Vault Tech headquarters and he like trips going up the stairs. Like they just kind of do little things to make him seem like an idiot. So I almost think Barb is truly the one pulling the strings at Vault Tech.
You know, it's a good point. Yeah, I didn't even really think about that. But visually, they make him out to be kind of an idiot. But then whenever you see the boardroom scene with all these potential investors, he seems a lot more cold and confident. Like, so is he putting on this weird demeanor on purpose? Or are you right? Like, is he kind of just an oblivious doof that's very easy to persuade? And maybe Barb is the one that, for whatever reason, kind of fell into that. I don't know.
And Barb is the one that proposes dropping the bomb as the solution.
Yeah. Yeah, but then it's weird. It's like, then why is Bud the one that's still, like, now tasked with being, quote-unquote, immortal and living out his days as a brain in a little box inside Vault 31, kind of, I guess, waking up certain, you know, past Vault Tech executives whenever the time comes to have a new leader in Vault 32 or 33. So, yeah, it's very, I don't know. Yeah. There's definitely more to the Bud and Barb story, and there's more flashbacks for sure in season 2, because I liked that we didn't see the dissolve of Cooper and Barb's marriage. I think clearly at this point we know why, because he overheard all this, but what happened between that moment of him hearing what she was actually saying behind closed doors at Vault Tech and whenever he's riding off with his daughter trying to save her as the bombs drop, did he successfully get her to a vault like with her mother, and then they like were like, hey, thanks for getting her here, but you can't come in because you're not part of this? Or like, was it more sadistic? I don't know. There's a lot more to that story.
Yeah, and then when we first meet Coop, he's kind of down on his luck working a birthday party, so there was clearly some passage of time, And that also means, like, Barb chose to drop the bomb before Coop and her daughter were safe, which is interesting, too.
Right. And then it's like, well, the whole reason that she's proposing that is for to create this idealistic, you know, haven for, you know, her and her daughter specifically. Less about Coop. Maybe more so at that time when she was proposing it, but less so now, obviously. But if she and Vol-Tec were really behind the nukes, how the hell and why would she say, okay, drop them now when her daughter isn't safe?
So that's kind of Vol-Tec. And then we have the Dwellers, of course. And then another faction we meet is the Brotherhood of Steel. How did you feel about their portrayal? That's the one thing I've seen people not liking about this show. And I don't know anything about the Brotherhood, but the way they came off, I guess they're more intimidating in the games is kind of what I've been getting from the discourse online.
So I think a big thing is that, with the exception of New Vegas, from what I understand, most of the games are East Coast based, and this is West Coast. I also have read that discourse as well. People, because it's very weird. I mean, Fallout was a successful franchise, and then it stopped, and then Bethesda picked it up and rebooted it with Fallout 3. So there's a lot of people, when they say they're Fallout fans, they're just talking about post-Bethesda picking it up and, like, making that alongside stuff like Elder Scrolls, for example. But I've heard that this adaptation of the Brotherhood of Steel is more akin to Fallout 1 and 2, where they're more religious zealots. It's not all about, like, badassery and, you know, like, we're these protectors and in that sense. So I think it's more of an old school throwback. And it's also, they're across the country. Like, this is like a different, like, not version, but what's the word? It's a different cell, maybe you could say, than you would see in Fallout 3 and 4. But I gotta say, regardless of what the answer is, I loved this. Like, it's just such, like, seeing, like, religious zealots in a post-apocalypse world, like, I feel like that always makes for interesting stories. They're weirdly funny. They're weirdly cowardly. They're sometimes badass. It's a very strange combination of things.
Yeah, and I thought Maximus did a great job as being our POV character, especially when he starts posing as Knight Titus. Like in that second episode when Knight Titus kind of gets revealed to be a big coward who's just hiding in this suit, and then Maximus steps into it. I thought it was going to take a lot longer in the show for him to get a power suit. So I love that, like, right off the bat, he kind of got into one. And then seeing him, like, try to live up to his ideals for a little bit and then realize, like, oh, this is all kind of bullshit as the show goes on. I thought Maximus had a great journey in this show.
Oh, he had such a good journey. And there's also been a lot of people that, aside from the Brotherhood stuff, have been discussing his character negatively. And this is the thing we always talk about. It's one thing for you to hate a character, but also it's like, do you hate them because of their portrayal, or do you hate them because they want you to hate them? It's like a weird in-between. But the journey that he goes on, I thought, was one of the more fascinating ones, because if Lucy is somebody that goes from super idealistic to experiencing the wasteland and is told directly by the ghoul, like, hey, this world's going to change you. You better be ready for it or you won't survive. And by the end of the show, she's clearly a survivor. Like, she can handle her shit. She can do this stuff. Maximus goes on a very different journey that is kind of the inverse, but with some weird kind of speed bumps along the way. He kind of, you know, obviously he was born into the wasteland. He's experienced the horrors of this. And then he has moments where he kind of becomes more idealistic as the show goes on, like how Lucy started. But then you have the great ending where it's like he wants to be with her. He wants to kind of, you know, continue their path together. It doesn't work out. And then he's like discovered himself. And then, like, Lee Moldaver gets killed. Like, you know, the person the Brotherhood wants to kill the most. They all walk in and just see her dead. They assume he did it. He says he didn't. But, like, it's already, like, too little too late, and now he's being championed, like, it's our new knight, it's Maximus, and you see his face, so it's like, he goes from being cold to more idealistic, but then he's still, like, being forced into this Brotherhood role that he doesn't really want anymore. It's, like, a very fascinating journey that's kind of all over the place.
It's interesting, too, because at the beginning of the show, he would have wanted that more than anything, see him at the end, where he truly, like, he's being forced into being a knight, and now he absolutely doesn't want it, was great. In season two, do you think he feels abandoned by Lucy when he wakes up and she's not there? And do you think there's some tension there when they finally meet up? I kind of don't want them to do that. It feels very easy. But I did kind of get that that's the vibes they were setting up.
I could see that. I don't know. I guess I also don't really know what he would expect, because it's like, hey, I got fucked up and I passed out. I mean, is Lucy going to stay here? Is, like, the rest of my entire legion of Brotherhood come in? So he seems like he's gone on enough of a journey that he understands things more. He also knows about her background a little bit more and, like, what she's after. So I'm with you. I hope they don't take that easy route of like, oh, they become antagonistic for a few episodes. Because I actually do really like their chemistry. It's really cute, which is a weird word to use for it in a world like this, but it was kind of cute to see them develop that, and I hope they don't, you know, stray too far away from that.
I do never want to hear Maximus talking about his genitals ever again, though.
That was so funny. that's Fallout for you. I mean, they're talking about masturbation in the most cringy and funny way, and this is a literal apocalypse. It's perfect.
And the opening of the show is like Lucy talking about like messing around with your cousin is great, but it can only go so far.
Oh my god, that was the first line that you see online everywhere when talking about Fallout. Like that's the line that kind of hits everybody right away. Like, oh, this is a comedy, I guess. But yeah, is there any other factions we should talk about? I think those are obviously the main ones. Should we spend any time like on the ghoul stuff? Because there is also some dark and weird stuff there too.
I just wanted to ask you about the ghouls. Because I like, as much as this show does a great job of being accessible, this is the one thing where they didn't explain super well. So I never got a clear understanding of like how Coop can live this long. Like they almost seem like living zombies. But for the most part, I was confused about how they've actually been able to like survive since before the bombs dropped.
Yeah, I definitely remember a lot of ghoul characters from the games. I don't remember if there was lore behind them. It's been a long time, but yeah, it just seems like the ghouls, the ones that have lived this long, like Coop, are people that were exposed directly to like the radiation of the bombs dropping. But then somehow, some way, they weren't killed by them. The radiation hit them full force. So they're able to survive, especially with this medicine. Like they can't die now because their body has been so radically changed. So if they have this medicine, they can keep on going. Whenever the ghoul is first introduced to us, he's literally in a grave, but you see the drip. There's like a medicine IV drip going down. So keeping him that way. And I guess if you don't take medicine for long enough because it's hard to find, then you become feral, as they say it, which is just you kind of lose all inhibitions. And maybe the word zombie, kind of like you said, would be more appropriate. And we met some feral ghouls throughout this. I think a great introduction to that is Coop just running into an old friend of his who's also a ghoul, but has gone too long, and he just puts him out of his misery and strips him for jerky, as he says. But I'm kind of with you. As I was watching, I was like, yeah, I don't really remember how this worked. So that's probably something the show could have done a bit better of, like, you know, giving us a line or two or whatever it may have been.
I was also wondering if Coop had been in the wasteland this whole time, or if he at some point ended up in one of those cryopods and was let out based on his connections to his wife.
Yeah. And how long does he spend like in a grave? Is this the first time he's done that? You know, how long was he down there? Does he just, I don't know, whenever people wake him up for a bounty, does he just do that and then immediately go back to sleep? So like, how long has he been presently awake, or however you want to put it? Because he also has like a vendetta. He wants to find his family. That's his whole big last line at the end here. So, who knows? Clearly, he has some knowledge of the cryo because he meets Lee Moldaver in the flashbacks, which I thought was an awesome reveal. I thought they were going to do the boring shit of being like, I'm your grown-up daughter. I was in a cryopod for a long time, and I'm your daughter. So, yeah, so he has some knowledge of the vaults, like more so than just overhearing his wife and people saying shit. So, yeah, a lot more to the stories. Again, we keep coming back to that point. I think we've kind of, we haven't talked about it fully yet, at least your thoughts on it, but we've talked about the mystery. And really, I mean, I guess the main plot of the show is, oh no, I'm from this vault, I'm from this secure place, my dad gets kidnapped, I'm Lucy, I'm going to go out into that scary new world and find him. I guess that would probably technically be the main plot. But the one that we keep coming back to, it sounds like the one that maybe we were most interested in, is the mystery. And I think really the mystery is the one surrounding the vaults. And I liked earlier, you were like, yeah, if this had been weekly, I don't know if that would have sustained me in a way that, you know, would have been good enough. And I'm kind of been like, I think it would have, but obviously we'll never know. But yeah, let's talk about the vault mystery, particularly with the connections of 31 through 33. Like, what were some highlights for you there?
I thought the best reveal was the Buds line kind of feels like a throwaway line when that dude first says it. But then the reveal that the overseers of 31 through 33 are part of the Buds program and were existing management. And also, like, kind of have connections back to Coop, and he has his own vendetta. It was satisfying when I got to see him, like, meet Hank again in the wasteland. And that really was not predictable. I knew there was going to be something more nefarious with Vault-Tec, of course, But the fact that it was like this original staff running the vaults, I thought was a great reveal to the mystery.
So good. And yeah, just not predictable. And, you know, in everything that comes out, we talk about predictability, I think, like, and how that can be a little bit disappointing, even if it's done well. But yeah, this was a wild twist. And one of my favorite just little lines of dialogue that is so on paper throwaway, but then just in the performance and the way they shot the vault, I think the in particular, like the production design of the vaults, I mean, was just pitch perfect. But Moises Arias says Norm walking through Vault 31, and he says a line, he says something like, "Is this the entire vault?" And just that line alone was so good. Just realizing that it's basically just a long hallway that opens up into a room that is full of just cryopods. And that's the entire vault. And like, this is something he's never seen before as somebody that's only lived in Vault 33. But yeah, that reveal, and just, and then you think back, what was the line again? Like the how they like vote for office in Vault 33 is like, there was something about like Vault 31, like thumbs up. Like there's like, yeah, a line where, like, it's like, you always vote for 31 or something like that. Cause they're smart. They know what they're doing over there. And just the realization that once it was time for a new person in power, they literally just woke somebody up that was from before the apocalypse and just said, "All right, go on in. You're going to win office in 33. Just run it. We can talk on the computer. Like, no issues. Like, I'll tell you what to do." So just a crazy reveal.
And the idea that these people are still so bought in to Vault Tech all these years later that they're still upholding that their original mission of like running out these experiments. The idea that Hank is willing to nuke a town because the vault might get discovered. I thought that reveal was great. And then like the fact that his wife got left as a ghoul because of all that radiation was insane.
Yeah, because of him. Yeah, it's so weird because it's like the show has a good pacing in the sense of like, for example, you know, Cousin Chet, as we'll call him, he falls into this weird relationship with, I can't remember her name, but this woman who lost her husband in the initial action scene we talked about where Vault 32 people come in and, or I guess technically outsiders come in and kill them all for their resources. You feel really bad for her. She's just this really sweet character. And as you're watching, you're like, I wonder why they kept her alive. I assumed that she died and then she doesn't. It's like, oh, okay. And then just by the end, you just retroactively hate so many of these people because of, you know, the fact they came from the before times. And you never feel bad for them. But then you do go, like, you're so right. Like, they're maintaining this mission that at this point, there's really no need to. I mean, if you got your way, like, you know, centuries from now for this reclamation day and you all come out and the vault people are the people that are going to save society, it's like, nobody's going to listen to you. So what are you doing? Like, you're just maintaining something that you shouldn't be. So it's not that you feel bad for them, but you do. I think you just feel sad for the state of the world that they put themselves in.
And the idea that this psychological breeding experiment is for the most mundane thing ever. They're breeding like a bunch of super middle managers. Like, how freaking boring is that? Crazy. To come out and just like be really good at management.
And then it just like makes scenes where like Lucy shows up into Philly and is talking to like Dale Dickey's character. And she's just like, "You're a vault dweller. That's crazy. You guys are wild." Like, nobody respects or will listen to you. So if that's one person that won't do that, you as a collective will not be listened to at all. So it's just wild.
I think the last like big mystery we haven't talked about yet is this idea of the fusion power and like constant renewable energy that does get activated and you see some electricity pop back on for the world.
Yeah. What did you feel about that?
I just wasn't sure like next steps for season two here because the Brotherhood
kind
of wins. So are they going to just take that energy? Like, I don't see them leaving it on because they don't want old relics out in the world. They want to control them.
True.
So I guess I'm just wondering, like, what are the impacts here? Like, are people going to have the power turned back on and then have it taken away from them and, like, that causes something? Or is the Brotherhood just going to try and control this power and maybe this is how they kind of gain more power over the wasteland?
Oh, that would be interesting. Yeah, maybe it is Brotherhood related. I could see an arc where they go from, you know, old relics are bad to, oh, this is cool. Like, maybe that's part of it. And it was just an awesome visual to just see in this wasteland that we've gotten so accustomed to for 8 episodes, like, and knowing how long it's been since society fell, just seeing, like, within the second this thing turned on, just an entire city lights up was, like, a really cool and wild thing to see.
I did also like the Sandy Shores idea of originally Vault-Tec drops the bomb, causes this ending. Society does rebuild on their own. They have an idealistic city. And then Vol-Tec again drops a bomb when Hank shows up and has his wife taken from him. So they like Vol-Tec just keeps this cycle going.
Yeah, and speaking of Vol-Tec and the cycle, it's like, I guess based on how the show is going, meeting Bud, obviously, in the flashbacks, and then kind of getting Hank and some of these other side characters like Betty Pearson as well, who's now like running shit in Vault 33 and is Norm's biggest enemy. We know they all came before, but I also like the reveal that, oh, those characters that we're familiar with, you know, according to the show, they are not the head of Vol-Tec, because whenever Hank kind of, you know, can't get Lucy to his side at the end there, he runs off in the power armor. And they tell us that, I guess, kind of the secret boss or head of whatever's going on in the world currently with ties to Vol-Tec is in New Vegas. And that's where he shows up at the end. So I also like that reveal that, oh, these characters that we're familiar with, there's people on top of them, too. There's higher ups that we're going to have to deal with in season two.
And that was their position in Vol-Tec. They were just kind of middle managers who Bud had selected as like, I'm going to breed your genes and you guys are going to be great at being my middle managers once we rebuild the new society.
Yeah, and if they're the middle managers and you have somebody like Barb talking about actually dropping bombs, I mean, what are the thoughts of the higher-ups? Like, what's their stance on all this? Was this their idea originally? And she just said, hey, I like that idea. Like, a lot of room to maneuver there, so I'm excited for that.
And they have all those other companies in the boardroom, so are all those executives later on, like, still alive in New Vegas?
Yes, one of them I know is from New Vegas, Mr. House, I want to say. I think he kind of runs New Vegas and he is in the boardroom scene. So I guess they're going to tie back to that. Lots of New Vegas stuff in this. And that's kind of why I downloaded it after watching the show. I was like, I got to play that. But yeah,
I've heard that's the best one. So I do kind of want to play it, too. But then I've seen screenshots of it and kind of looks like shit. So I don't know if I'm going to do it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's older now. Yeah. I've heard it's the best RPG of them, but you like a lot of, because that one, I guess, is Bethesda. I don't know how you word it. Like, maybe they developed it, but Obsidian produced it. I can't even remember, like, what's Obsidian's biggest game? Like, Outer Worlds? I feel like there's some games of theirs that we've played and really liked. So I think we actually would like New Vegas, but it might just be hard to get into. We'll see. That kind of, I guess, leads into the closing here. We're talking about, you know, New Vegas and where they could go with season two. Like, what else about season two with, like, the other storylines do you want to see continue, like, resolve any theories, any of that good stuff before we finish up here?
I'm excited to see who's calling the shots, because that's basically what Walton Goggins said. He's like, do you want to tag along and meet your makers? So I'm excited to see that. I am curious, like, what is going on with Coop's family? Because that was a great reveal. I thought, like, where's my fucking family? So clearly something happened along the way. Is Barb a captive now? Is his daughter still alive? I'm very interested in that character. And then I guess I don't have a lot of like new theories because I don't know too much about this world. But most of my excitement is to see these existing stories continue because they did such a great job in season one. So putting Maximus into this knight role that now he doesn't want, I'm excited to see that conflict with the Brotherhood. And just like more expansion of this world. I think going to Vegas in a wasteland is a great idea. Clearly it was a great idea for a game. So can't wait to see that explored in the show.
And I think the show did a good enough job of giving us enough scenes with Coop and Lucy that you just love that pairing. So the idea that it's like, hey, you got some scenes along the way. At the end of the finale of season one, we're definitively saying, hey, this is our little team up. We're going off on our own story. I'm excited for that to be a main focus now of season two. I just love their pairing. And I really do think the ghoul, Coop, whatever you want to call him, like one of my like more favorite characters in recent memory, like. Yes, in some ways, maybe he has just been dragged along to the point in this wasteland where you could call him evil, but there's so much more under the layers that, like, I never know what he's going to do, and he's badass, so I'm excited for more of that. I'm also something we didn't really talk too much about, like, the ending of the Vault storyline. Who the fuck is going to wake up Norm, who is literally put in a position where he's trapped in Vault 31, nobody knows to come there because what nobody from 32 or 33 would know to go into 31. Nobody's going to invite them now because Bud's brain is going to be like, no, nobody can come here. So he just has to go into cryo. So when and how does he wake up and what role does he play in the rest of this show? No idea.
It can't be any other than our hero, Cousin Chet. Cousin Chet's going to save the day in a big way.
I hope so. I really did love him by the end, too, just like,
because he has that look of terror when he gets paired up with that girl who's now the overseer, and she's from Vault 31. So he has those underlying suspicions. And
that look that he and Norm share when they announce her as the overseer is so scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a great and realistic character, too. It's like he believes everything he saw. He believes Norm. I loved him and Norm's pairing as well. Like, very good, very interesting, very funny at times. But I feel like he has a bigger role to play, too. And I think it's going to be like, I think by the end of season two, for example, we're going to be like, what an awesome, like, badass, like, kind of redemption arc that Chet had. And there's maybe, I think you're right, he's probably the one that has to go to 31, because maybe somehow he comes back to 33 and Betty's like, oh, yeah, Norm, he left. And Chet's like, what do you mean he left? Where'd he go? So maybe he finds his way to 31 and that's how it all resolves. I hope so. But yeah, I'm so excited. Like, I'm excited for like everything, honestly, to continue.
This show also did a great job of just like characters I originally thought were throwaway. Like, oh, that's, he's a funny cousin who's jealous of his cousin getting married. Like, yeah. Oh, he like actually has a bigger role in the show. Like, and same with Norm. I was like, man, it was cool to see Moises pop up. He had a great like intro and he's back later on. So they did a great job of these minor characters still having important parts.
Yeah. And then they did the opposite. You're like, oh, this Lee Motiver, this is the main villain. And then you have, oh, we got Kyle MacLachlan for this. We got Michael Emerson. And they're each in like one or two episodes, but still interesting in their own right. But yeah, Austin, I think that kind of covers season one. You know, we loved it. Can't wait for season two. Anything else to say? Any final words?
I've been thinking about some more video game adaptations I'd like to see. Want to see Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy take on a Helldivers show. It's taking the world by storm right now. Just like the Fallout series, there's tons of lore that's not explained to you in the game that you have to seek out and find. There's like a great foundation for a show there.
Definitely the same like level of violence and humor as well. That could be fun. I mean, Helldivers too, you know, we've been playing. That's been huge. I could see an adaptation coming for that. I guess another big question, I'm sure Todd Howard's been asked this a million times. I haven't seen an interview where he has, but, you know, now that Fallout has become, you know, the second most watched thing on Amazon fucking of all time, what's the status of an adaptation of Elder Scrolls? Do you think they do that too? I mean, is that too Game of Thronesy? Is it too similar to other things? I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that's something that is at least being talked about right now.
Or are they ever going to make another Fallout game?
Well, that's the funny thing, too, because like Bethesda, people have been like, you know, what's crazy is that we're watching a Fallout show and we all love it. And now we have to wait like 12 more years for Elder Scrolls 6 and then another 12 for Fallout 5 because they like took this break to make Starfield, which unfortunately, I mean, I didn't even play. It seems like people were kind of like, yeah, it was fine, whatever. So now they're like, we're working on Elder Scrolls 6 now, and then we'll do Fallout 5 after. So there's a long time to wait for new Fallout games.
There is a funny story going around, funny in a sad kind of way, but there's like a mod team that's been working on a mod update to Fallout 4 set in London for years, and they were set to release it this month. And then Fallout 4 pushed a new gen update, and now all their mod tech can't run anymore. So they had to delay their game by like a year and a half.
Which is like, I get it. Okay, I don't think Bethesda needs to cater to modders, but at the same time, it is kind of fucked up and sad in a weird way that, you know, like we're saying, you know, Fallout comes out. What a perfect time to be like, hey, Fallout 5, 2 years away. It's coming. So, but the only thing they can do is like, hey, remember Fallout 4 from 10 years ago? We updated it. That's all they could really do to line up with the show. So definitely a weird time. I think Bethesda has a lot to figure out, but I'm glad that they were involved with this production, at least.
Meanwhile, Amazon is like, Fallout Season 2 will be here next year.
Did they say that?
They greenlit it, so I don't know about next year. Hopefully next year. In a perfect world, next year.
As you know, another bad thing about the streamers, you know that I'm very tired of having to wait 2 to 3 years between seasons of things. Like, I want to go back! I want to go back to every year you get something, but I don't think we are, so fingers crossed it's 2025. We talked about Severance earlier. They literally haven't said anything about that this year. So it's probably 2025, which means we waited 3 years. Will I still care? I don't know. I'm just frustrated.
Andor season two. Where is that?
Oh, my God. Don't get me started. I mean, that's going to be a literal 3 year wait. I'm frustrated. Streamers, stop it. I'm gonna drop a nuke on you. All right, Austin, well, before we close out, before my mind just explodes and devolves, let's do some Arnie's Podcast Awards, the part of our show where we take something positive, negative, or something in between from the project we just talked about, and we give it something that deserves an award. What do you got today?
I'm going to give the most mangled foot I've ever seen award, and that's Thaddeus's foot. That thing is fucking nasty. Also, Thaddeus, like, also kind of a nothing character who became like a little charming towards the end there. I'm excited to see him in season two. So
he's going
to
join our ghoul squad.
That foot was nasty.
That was gross. All right. My award is something, and I got to say, it is negative. You know, I don't want to be negative if I don't have to, but watching this show, I was so impressed by the production. Like I said, everything felt so practical, and this is the way I like CG to be used. It's like it's kind of just extending practical sets where they're actually shooting stuff. But nothing's perfect, and I gotta say, I literally cringed and looked away and had to pause because of an effect they used, which was so laughably bad. And it was in the last episode where I was like, don't put a bad taste in my mouth right now. I want to know, Austin, if you agree. Does the CGI de-aging of Kyle MacLachlan deserve a negative reward? Whenever he walks out and introduces himself in the flashback to Coop, it was the weirdest looking de-aging maybe we've ever seen.
Oh, that didn't stand out to me at all. I didn't even notice it.
Wow. Okay. Well, never mind. Bring on season two.
You do have an eye for critical de-aging, though. You're very critical of it.
I guess you're right. That is like a very niche thing for me. I am critical of like de-aging stuff. But yeah, with that, everybody, thank you all so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you hit that follow button so you never miss our upcoming content. Also, please share us with your friends if you enjoyed this episode. We really appreciate that to continue to grow our show. Please leave us reviews as well. Even if you don't write anything, leaving us a 5-star review over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or every your podcasts really does help us out. At The Arnies is our social, and thearnies.media is the website. We'll be back next Tuesday with another episode.
And keep in mind, we do want to hear from you, so please send us a message on Instagram at thearnies or email us thearniesmedia@gmail.com. What did you think of Fallout Season 1? Would you mate with your cousin in a vault? Would you eat oysters that are 200 years old? Anything you say, we'll read on the show and react to it live on our latest episode.
Yep. All right, everybody. Hope you enjoyed this episode. With that, we'll see you next week for who the hell knows what. Probably some more streaming stuff that I'll somehow get into a really passionate conversation about the state of streaming, which I can't stop doing, or de-aging. Who knows what it will be. But anyway, we'll see you then. Look forward to that. Hope you enjoyed Fallout and this episode.
I want to be one of Bud's buds.
Ew.